Hey, this is John F. Mers, author, actor, and owner of 1021 Studios, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
Hey everyone, how's it going? And welcome back to the show. Great to have you here. And of course, joining me is the one and only Curtis Hughes. Curtis, man, what is up, buddy?
Nothing much, Max. How's everybody doing? Welcome to another edition of the wonderful, magnificent, and may I say awesome, Citywide Blackout.
Exactly. And if you're not doing this already, be sure to tune in for our regular Saturday morning fun time, basically. This is our live show, so there's no editing, no retakes. It is in person, 10 a.m. EST, right on the Citywide Blackout Instagram page. You won't regret it. And you also won't regret tuning in for this episode, too, because my next guest is a past guest from, God, years ago, back, you know, before COVID, actually. So that's what, 10, 17, 25 years ago, Curtis? Is that where we're at now?
Yeah, that's about, that's Citywide Blackout.
Just for inflation, you know?
Yes.
But she is a fantasy writer, and when we first spoke, she was on her first book, The Summoned, and it's been a lot more since then, suffice to say. Author Maria Guglielmo joins us. Maria, welcome back to the show. Good to have you here.
Great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Okay. So, yeah. So, like I said before, last time we had you on the show for your first book, Summoned, this was your debut novel. And you have you had a couple things done since then, a few more things, you know. And you also got a brand new series, which you just recently dropped. This is the Rift World series. You're now kind of like a book and a half because you released Witch City Rift, I believe, earlier this year. And now you have Rifted Hearts. I guess the first thing that I'm curious about is this new series. Is this sort of a complete like do-over from your first trilogy, or is this kind of ties into it in some way?
Well, this is really a totally new universe. As my other book was a little bit more contemporary urban fantasy, paranormal romance, and Rifted Hearts is actually set in the future, 25 years after a monster apocalypse. So it's post-apocalyptic, but still a lot of fun. Not exactly The Last of Us. It's lighter than that.
It couldn't be any heavier, I don't think. Also, Monster Apocalypse is a great name. We gotta copyright that one at some point. Okay. So like I said, you have your sort of like prequel book, Witch City Rift, which you can actually get for free, folks. If you sign up for Maria's newsletter, you get your free copy of this one. And now you have the new book out, Rifted Hearts, which is out on March 19th. So just really around the corner. So I guess one thing I'd like to ask is just kind of like where this series picks up, what this one's all about.
Sure. Well, a lot of times my books are kind of inspired by my vacations. So this book in particular started after I decided to go with my two daughters to a dude ranch in Arizona. The dude ranch is next to Saguaro National Park. For all you Rhode Island people out there, those are those really cool cacti with the arms. After it, I was thinking, of course, of, you know, that as a setting, but you know, if you already have horses, why not make it better with monster horses? So that was kind of the beginning of the idea for the series. So it's set in a different fictional universe than my From Smokeless Fire trilogy. And it does draw on some features of Western fiction and the West, which I don't know much about. So I spent a lot of time asking people dumb questions about horses. And rodeos and cowboy hats and many other topics. But it's really been a blast to write.
I think for a writer, the research part is really like a big part of like what you do. And to only have things like horses and cowboy hats on there, that's actually pretty tame.
Well, I left out a lot of the more violent aspects too of the fantasy.
Oh yes, that's right. Because your series is definitely a lot more comedic, I would say, than like most fantasy.
Yeah, I definitely do try to get some dark humor in there. So there's a little bit of pathos and, some close calls for the heroes involved, as always there should be. But I do kind of like always bring myself back to the you know, the famous line from the creator of Buffy. I'm going to mess it up, but he's like, it was something to the effect of make it as scary as you want, but, you know, for God's sakes, like, let people laugh once in a while. So I think that even, you know, even the best horror has to have kind of a touch of levity, or, you know, it's just too much. So the book definitely, you know, starts on a lighter vein. You know, there are definitely some challenging parts, for the characters. You know, two people, my protagonist, Remy and Kaveh, who, you know, really, there are a huge amount of obstacles for the two of them to come together, you know, starting with that they're both lying to each other and everyone else and to themselves. So that, that definitely sets up a lot of issues for them.
Yeah, Remy does not seem like your typical heroic character. He's basically this like half-human con man who has the ability to basically manipulate sexual desire. Not a power set you really see a lot too often. What goes into crafting this particular character?
Well, I just have a soft spot for villains, you know, and or for sort of like anti-hero type villains. And I just can never really resist putting them in my books, particularly if they're a little bit more of a sort of a little chaos gremlin just going around, you know, wreaking havoc wherever they go. And Remy certainly would fall into that category. You know, the psychic lust power thing, I'm a huge fan of mythology and folk tales. So the idea of someone with a magical ability to seduce, you know, your incubi, your succubi, all of those types of things, even the vampire legends have some of that. You know, it's a pretty common finding across multiple cultures. You know, there's always some scary but beautiful monster who wants to kind of lure you into a place that you really shouldn't go.
Do you feel like this is a very similar character to the character in your first trilogy, Azahara? I mean, you describe her as a party girl of the paranormal, which is an awesome like job title, by the way. Do these two characters?
I think you should retitle your job as that, Max.
Me? Yeah, man. I'll get on that, man. Business cards are on the way. But Maria, a question to you is, are Azahara and Remy kind of in the same like ballpark as characters?
Yeah, I would say it's sort of that anti-hero character, a little bit of you know, a villain who's sort of not bad enough. There's a lot of family themes that come into my work. I never realize it until after I've written it. You know, both sort of the conflict between found family and biologic family. And I just can't, you know, resist pairing someone like that with someone who's, you know, just a lot more on the straight and narrow. And, you know, there's just an inherent conflict from the very beginning.
All right, Curtis Mann, over to you.
I love the cover art, so I wanted to ask, who does the work for the cover art for your book?
Sure. So for Witch City Rift, which is the short story prequel, and for Rifted Hearts, that is from Dar Albert, and she's with Wicked Smart Designs. You can tell she's a New Englander. And she does a lot of work for a group. I'm part of the Rhode Island Writers, Rhode Island Romance Writers Association. And they've been a huge support and helped me with this project and writing in general. So I got her name from them. And, you know, really, she just does fantastic work. I'm so happy with the covers.
Yeah, they're really, really great. Going to Remy's character, you know, has the power to manipulate sexual desire, which is pretty unique. What kind of legwork goes into creating the abilities of the character?
Well, I think that, you know, when it comes to writing fantasy, whether it's a romance or not, the world building part is incredibly fun. And I think it's a trap you fall into if you spend so much time in your world building, you're not developing your characters. But I think the key point is to start with boundaries and limitations, because you have to have a setup where when if you give someone powers, you take them away. I mean, everyone's familiar with superheroes and supervillains, and, you know, they always have their fatal weakness, their kryptonite. And, you know, going back into myth and legend, you have, you know, the Achilles heel, and you, the Gorgon or Medusa, you know, paralyzing herself with her own mirror. So with great power has to come something that can take that power away and weaken that individual or defeat them. And so with Remy, you know, his intended target for his con just isn't impacted by his powers at all. So that kind of puts himself into a situation where he's, you know, off balance, not in his usual comfort zone. And that kind of sets up some tension for the rest of the book.
Yeah, I definitely got that because it seems like with Remy, if he gets into a situation where his like his morals or his like ethics are kind of called into question, it really just throws everything off.
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's the type of person who's sort of always the life of the party. But, you know, internally, there's a lot of conflict and hurt there. You know, one of the things, again, about having some humor in the book is you can then when you sort of delve into some, you know, some kind of inner trauma and things, I think it's kind of easier to grasp kind of a balance of it. And also he does a lot of things that are not very nice. So he kind of deserves to get roughed up a little bit in the book.
How so?
Well, in Witch City Rift, which is the prequel, he has to, steal a wedding present. And the wedding present was given, to the bride, to her new husband. And the bride is a, you know, several hundred year old sea monster. And her husband is a sort of a young, naive marine biologist. And she's not happy when both her husband is in danger and her wedding gift has been stolen. So that leads to some significant complications and issues in that short story.
I'd like to actually like read more about like how this couple got together because you have a several hundred year old sea monster and a marine biologist. That's a really nice setup.
Yeah, and that's a great lead-in because actually there's sort of an alien mechanism in the book called the matchmaker who brings people together. So you know, this again, you know, true love, fated mates. Again, it's in all the latest romance novels. And if you go back 1,000 years, you're gonna find it in a whole bunch of tales and stories and songs. So some force is bringing people together. It's bringing people together you wouldn't expect. So there's an inherent conflict there and they have to overcome a lot to eventually find themselves together as a real couple, not just people who are sort of pushed together by fate.
Let's talk more about the matchmaker. This is obviously a very like powerful presence we see not only in the first book, but also in the upcoming one, Rifted Hearts. What is the matchmaker?
So I kind of have the matchmaker as sort of an alien entity that is not really even understood even by the Rift people, who are, you know, the monsters in the book, but the polite term for them in polite society is Rift people. And it's viewed as a religious entity, you know, it's maybe semi-divine entity. So it's not a character in the sense that there's something on the page. And in terms of how it works, I kind of view it as a force that can actually alter reality into a series of coincidences and basically maneuver people together. And the end result is that perhaps alliances or families or other structures are created that might influence history down the line. When the Rift world, which is the alien world, kind of got broken apart and is partly on Earth, all of that went kind of a little haywire. So now you have kind of, you know, monsters and people getting together, cats and dogs, you know, that sort of thing. And that causes a lot of distress to the traditionalists. So we have, you know, humans who are very traditionalists and don't like change. And you have the same thing on the monster side. Some people are more accepting of change or maybe more accepting of understanding people or creatures different from them.
All right, then. Let us dive into the story behind Rift of Hearts. Again, this one is out on March 19th, so really just a very, very short time away. And this one, once again, has our good buddy Remy trying a new con. He is out to charm a veterinarian with ties to his crime family's enemies. and you know, easy job, in and out, basic like smash and grab kind of thing. What happens though that just throws everything out of whack, if it's not too much of a spoiler?
Sure. So again, you know, Remy is a city slicker boy. He's from Boston. And he's going to Arizona for the first time. He's going to a dude ranch for the first time. And it's most certainly the first time that, you know, he's ever sat on a horse. So he's out of his element in a lot of ways. And the Cave, who's the cowboy veterinarian, you know, is a lot of things that Remy isn't, you know, quiet, introverted, kind of the strong, silent type. Someone who is in fact not at all interested in flirtation. And I do have Ace Rep in the book. So Cave is demi-romantic. And I was really pleased to have kind of some asexuality rep. This is the first time I've had it in my books, and I'm really happy about it. So there's an immediate conflict where Remy is wildly overconfident and kind of swoops in, and he's just totally rejected. And he has to tries that a few times and finally realizes that he might actually have to talk and form a relationship with someone if he wants to get close to them.
The choice to make your character asexual, was this planned or just sort of come about during the writing process?
I identify as asexual myself, Ace Arrow, and I had been learning more about it. As you know, the term hasn't been around for that long, and I'm older. So as always, Gen Z is always teaching me new things. That was kind of the main driving force. I also think it introduces some elements of that maybe even in the monster world, there are some prejudices or opinions against people who have different sexualities. So that kind of comes up in the book. Well, I have to say, I kind of deliberately seek out things that aren't like that. So I read a lot of queer fiction. I read a lot of queer fantasy and paranormal romance. I also like novels and books that just kind of look like the world around us, you know? I mean, not everyone's buff and beautiful and able-bodied, you know? Not everybody's straight. Not everybody is maybe intellectually on the same level or has, you know, normal great health. So I think a lot of those different types of things, gender, identity, race, ethnicity, it's kind of nice to just sort of look at a place that looks like the place around you, right? I mean, there's nothing worse than an urban fantasy set in New York City where every single person is blonde and blue-eyed, you know? I mean, like, you know, New York City is such a wonderful melting pot. You know, you can get, you know, any food from any country if you just walk down the block. So if you're going to set a book there, you probably need to have visited there and look around you.
With that in mind, let's talk about Remy being from Boston, because I love that, of course. I lived in Boston for many years, love the city. Does that really factor into who he is as a person or what he does?
Well, I have some kind of jokes in there about that. Obviously, Witch City Rift is set in Salem, so there's like a little bit more of the terms of the jokes about Boston. But I mean, you know, there is definitely cultural differences between the East Coast and Boston and a place like Arizona. I noticed that when I was there. And so it's kind of interesting, even though they're both, you know, you can fly to Arizona as part of the U.S., they can come here, but you really do see some cultural differences. The way people dress, the way people talk, the way people think about things. So that was one interesting thing. And the second was I like couldn't resist like making Remy's family be like a rat mafia family, because the idea of like giant rats being like having their own mafia was just so hilarious. I had to go with it.
I like it. All right. Setting in Salem, of course, another place that I love very much. It was actually my hometown. Do we get to see a lot of the sights of Salem through your books?
So Salem is really, it's referred to in Rifted Hearts, but the Witch City Rift, which is a short story, so it's is set in the Salem of the future. And one of the aspects of the book is that although I you know, it's the monster, it's after the monster apocalypse. It's actually been after multiple apocalypses. So, you know, there's been global warming, there's been epidemics, and a good part of the East Coast has had to adapt with floating houses, with seawalls that absorb swells. And I did a lot of research as to, with some of the scientific advances that people are looking at right now, you know, looking at 10, 15, 20 years from now, when the waters are rising and you know, both Rhode Island and a lot of Massachusetts are very close to the water, what are some of the ways that we might adapt to the global warming and the sea rise? So I kind of throw in, it's a little bit more science fiction-y, honestly, than I intended it to be. It's a little bit more science fiction than fantasy, even in some parts. So I sort of have everything that's kind of magical be a type of biological tech that comes from the other world.
Hmm. Is this the first time you've really incorporated sci-fi into your fantasy?
Yeah, it definitely is, you know. And I like sci-fi, but I've been reading more fantasy for a number of years now. But there's some really awesome stuff out there that does just sort of turns some of the genres on their head, you know, like a space opera, but with a totally different viewpoint. So it's kind of fun, but also a lot of work, you know, I'm looking up kind of, you know, well, how are you going to handle something? Are there countries that already have floating houses? And the answer is yes. Europe is kind of ahead of us with that. As well as seawalls and other things that they're using so they can preserve some of their territory that's, you know, gradually going under the waves.
So it sounds like your books also kind of reflect what's kind of going on like right now, the things we're dealing with.
Yeah, I always say that, you know, in addition to the Zoom, the Dude Ranch, one of the things that inspired the book, and this is not to go to get depressing, but was COVID. So you know, as you know, I'm a physician, I'm a surgeon. I along with other frontline workers, we were out and about on the empty streets. And you know, it's had a huge impact on everyone. But at the time it was so striking. And then people just seemed to adapt to it and maybe adapted to the point where they maybe ignored it at their peril. And I was thinking, well, you know, like how many apocalyptic things could we have that for people just to say, okay, that's the new normal, you know, the zombie apocalypse. Okay. I'll just, you know, so this was kind of the thought of like, even the monster apocalypse after a number of years is just something people live with. You know, the monsters come out of a certain area. Maybe you might visit it because you're a tourist. So instead of having it be sort of the immediate post-apocalyptic, like, you know, society's crashed kind of thing. This is kind of a stage of adaptation where everybody's kind of gotten used to the idea of monsters.
How do you get used to the idea of a monster apocalypse?
Well, in the book, the U.S. and other militaries did their very best to attack the monsters. But since their universe has a different set of natural laws, they failed miserably. So after a period of time, billions of dollars and a lot of lives, you know, an accommodation was reached.
So we've got monsters, we've got magic, and we've got mischievousness. So the question is, going with Remy, facing a moral quandary, how does this challenge affect the character?
Right. And I think that, again, I think Remy is a person who's not naturally honest. He's sort of been brought up and taught to lie. But what that's led him to do is to lie to himself. And he's not being honest to himself. And it really takes him the whole book, to avoid any spoilers, before he can be honest with himself. And then that allows him to have some honesty with other people.
All right. Now, we've definitely got a very diverse world here. We've got a bit of ours. We've got a bit of this one, a bit of that one. How much did you have to world build this thing before you actually could start writing it? Or did you kind of go along as you wrote the book?
Well, I am mostly a pantser, I will admit it. I've tried every single time to set up a structure, and I do like reading books about structure. But in the end, I just kind of sit down and write, and it comes in spurts, and it just takes me into a lot of different directions. Characters will just pop out of nowhere. It makes my editing difficult, but, it's a great process and it's a fun process. So I enjoy drafting. But the editing part is painful at times.
I can only imagine, but it's also fun, right? Because you get to kind of, it's almost like you're discovering this world as you're writing it, you're going all of these different kind of directions. Does this lead to any major changes in what you had planned originally for the books?
Yes. I mean, like whole characters and plot points came out I've gotten some early feedback on the book, and there are some side characters that a lot of my ARC readers and reviewers have really liked. So that kind of gave me a direction and an interest in where the series might go. And then I'm just a total sucker for like adorable, crazy monster animals. So I had to throw some of them in the book. I just couldn't resist.
Okay, so now what you need is these like plushies of your monsters.
Squishmallows.
There you go. Merchandise this thing, you know?
There you go.
Oh, awesome. That sounds incredible. My kids would probably buy every one of them and I wouldn't get to sell them.
Oh, well, that's a bit of a problem then. All right. Well, yeah. In the meantime, let us, of course, ask the big question here. What is next? The book comes out on March 19th, but what's after that?
So the second book, which is definitely needs a lot more work. I'm kind of about maybe like 20% through it, if that, is going to kind of continue the theme of sort of inappropriate people being brought together by the matchmaker. And it is also set at Moonstar Ranch, at the Dude Ranch. Oh. So characters are going to be familiar to people who read Rifted Hearts. They were very popular. They're very popular secondary characters in that book. But exactly what they're going to go through, I used to like kind of think it was a little strange where people who wrote said like that the characters took control. But honestly, that's kind of how it works for me. So the characters are going to be driving for a while and we'll just have to see where they end up.
I like that. Well, folks,
we're all on the back seat without seatbelts.
Exactly.
That sounds like how things go in this show usually. I like that. It's a good metaphor. Well, folks, where this thing is ending is right now, because we are going to be bringing this conversation to a close. Maria, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. And for the folks at home, if you want to learn more, if you want to get these books, which you want to get these books, you go to maguglielmo.com. Link is in the description. And of course, Rifted Hearts out on March 19th. Witch City Rift, already available, and you definitely want to check out her first trilogy of books, which are also available again on the site, guys. It's all right there. That's where you go to get all the stuff. And Maria, thanks again for speaking to us, and we'll be talking again real soon.
Great, thank you so much.
And with that, we bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening, and if you haven't already, check us out on Facebook under Citywide Blackout, and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. You can catch this and all your favorite episodes on your favorite podcast platform, and new episodes are added every week, as well as on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. You get me at citywidemax@yahoo.com if you want to suggest a guest, submit your music, or just drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.